Chapter 21. Timur Yamadaev chose to meet at Location 6 again, mostly out of laziness. Daoud Masayev already knew where it was, and it seemed simpler to retrace steps and embrace the inherent security risks than to hope that Masayev wouldn't get lost on the back roads of West Virginia. The sky had turned gray overnight, and the air felt heavy with moisture. He wondered if it might rain. Another 15 degrees colder, and he'd be worried about snow. In a reversal of their previous meeting, Masayev's pickup was already parked at the mine. Timur pulled up to be nose to nose, then opened his door and stepped out. He noted with interest that Masayev merely rolled down his window, choosing to stay behind the wheel. To Timur's left, the river seemed unusually violent this morning.
"Assalamu alaikum," Timur said.
"Wa alaikum salam,"
Masayev replied.
"Good morning. I have news."
"As do I," Timur said.
"Your message has been delivered.
By now, Connie Kendall is fully aware of her children's status. She knows not to say anything."
"That's fine," Masayev said. "But I have decided to go another way. With the Danville cell all dead, I've ordered the Blanton cell to move forward with their mission, and then we will all pack our tents and regroup. I have accepted the fact that we have been compromised. The damage cannot be undone."
Timur said nothing for a few seconds, perhaps waiting for Masayev to change his mind after hearing his words being spoken aloud.
"You're being short-sighted, Daoud. We've invested nearly 2 years of work in this plan. I have no idea how much money."
"I know exactly how much money," Masayev said, "and it's a staggering amount. Sometimes the best way to protect an investment is to accept what is and turn away from what might be."
In the distant reaches of his mind, Timur knew that he should be embracing this as good news, an acceleration of the time when he could leave this hellhole and return home to his family and lifelong friends. But it hit him as a failure. The plan from the beginning had been to hit multiple transportation hubs around the country simultaneously, as many as 6. So how many sites will we be able to attack?
"Step back for me, please," Masayev said. "I want to get out of the vehicle."
Timur stepped back, and as he did, he pressed his elbow against the Smithy 44 Magnum that was holstered on his right hip. He had no reason to expect violence from his old friend, but one never knew. Once out of the pickup, Masayev wandered down toward the rushing water. He stopped when he was close enough for water to splash the toes of his pointy cowboy boots. Timur followed.
"Forgive me," Masayev said. "I feel more comfortable with the background noise."
"I understand completely. I was asking, I heard you," Masayev said. "We will attack only one location. Washington."
"Washington?"
Timur had shouted the word before he could stop it.
"Are you out of your mind? There is no harder target in the country. My God, why not choose Charleston or Dallas?"
"Because our cells there do not yet have special product, and we do not have time to get it to them. That distribution died when Craig Kendall died."
"Then we'll take our time and rebuild."
"We don't have time," Masayev said. "Have you been watching the news? Did you hear about the cow incident?"
Timur had not.
"It seems that the Kodirov brothers enjoyed more passion than sense."
Timur didn't know the twins well, but he had crossed paths with them.
"They seem intelligent enough to me. What did they do?" They tested the distribution system with actual product in a pasture filled with cows. From Masayev's attitude alone, he knew that something had gone wrong.
Did it work?
Oh, it worked, Masayev said with a chuckle. It killed the cattle, and the self-destructor on the machine worked great.
So what went wrong?
A kid, Masayev said. A 14-year-old boy wandered up to the device just as it was going off. He made it home before he died.
Oh, God, Timur moaned.
They'd lost a key element of surprise. Security officials would now be wary of an attack.
Oh, it's way more than a simple, oh, God. He had residue on him, and the residue killed his mother, too, plus a volunteer firefighter who arrived to help. Finally, somebody decided to stop people from traipsing through it all and closed the house down.
Do the police know what they're dealing with?
If they do, they haven't told the reporters. And that's as much of a concern to me as anything else. When the authorities stop talking to the press, it means they know they're onto something big.
Timur thought through the options that lay ahead for them.
VX is easily identified, he said. It's almost impossible to believe that they don't know.
All they have to do is close the link to Connie Kendall, Masayev said.
She will talk. You know that she'll talk. Anybody will talk over time. Our clock has ticked to zero. We need to go with what we have.
Timur saw it now. They truly had no choice but to push forward and then turn away.
Okay, he said.
When and where do we move on Washington? I've given the twins a window, Masayev said. Sometime within the next 3 days.
And the specific target?
I'm leaving that to them as well. I found that the more you try to micromanage these things, the larger the problems you create for the operators on the ground. I would certainly stay off the subway system for the next few days.
They shared a laugh, but Timur mourned the lost opportunity. Numbers mattered when killing people to make a political point. Worst case, if the twins did the job they'd been trained to do, there'd be at least 100 immediate fatalities, at least 300 poisoned, of whom a high percentage would likely die. Then there'd be people crushed in the panic, and then the secondary and tertiary exposures in ambulances and in hospitals. The only effective antidote for VX was atropine sulfate, and he imagined that there had to be limited supplies of that hanging around, even in a big city hospital. By the time they got the necessary supplies from neighboring jurisdictions, they'd be injecting corpses and waiting.
What about the cells in our other states? Timur asked. Are you disbanding them as well?
The ones on the coasts, yes, Masayev said. I think life will get very intense for them, and any that were on the list for a special product will certainly be disbanded, because we are to assume that they are compromised.
What about the operators?
In the short term, they will join their brothers in the Midwest and stay under cover until the right time presents itself again.
It will be some time, Timur said. The heat that will be generated by a chemical attack will be unbearable, yes, Masayev said, completing the sentence for him. And, of course, our friends in Mexico will have to be eliminated.
A list of potential names flooded Timur's head.
Which friends do you mean?
All of them, Masayev said. Quinto Alvarez, of course, and that idiot Lupo. Others, as you see fit.
Timur sensed that Masayev would prefer to be cryptic, but he had to ask the next question.
Armand Cortez? Masayev tossed another rock into the rushing water. A lob, really. Underhand swing. High, lofting arc.
My gut tells me, yes, we should kill Cortez as well. But my brain tells me not to start a war I'm not equipped to finish.
He shifted his eyes around to Timur and fixed him with a hard look.
But the first order of business is the Kendall boys.
What about them? Here again, Timur wanted no doubt as to what his mission was.
Kill them both. Make it colorful and dramatic. Make a recording and send it to me.
As boxers taxied across the tarmac at Manassas Regional Airport toward the hangar that Jonathan had rented on a 25-year lease, Gail pointed out the tiny window.
"Looks like Venice is here," she said.
She and Jonathan were alone in the cabin because Dawkins had decided to ride in the right-hand seat on the flight deck, in part to keep Boxer's company, something that Big Guy had never once in his entire life requested, but mostly for the view.
"I asked her to meet us," Jonathan said. "I'm not sure we have time to waste driving back and forth through the cove."
"Just to recap?"
"I've had her doing some research while we've been in transit," Jonathan said. "I feel that things are coming to a head. Problem is, I don't know when, where, or how."
The engines were still spooling down when Big Guy dropped the stairs. After depending for years on aircraft borrowed from friends and clients, Jonathan had decided a short time ago to purchase his own fleet of 2 executive jets, 1 short range and 1 long range, and now he wondered how he ever did his job without them. Yes, they were expensive to staff, house, and maintain, but the convenience was worth every penny. The members of his ground crew were all former Special Forces operators of one ilk or another, and they knew not to ask questions about the materiel they were sure to stumble across as they performed their maintenance chores. Lesser maintenance crews might get freaked out by the stores of explosives, detonators, firearms, and ammunition. Jonathan, Gale, and Dawkins headed straight to the conference room inside their hangar while boxers chatted with the ground crew. Jonathan's hangar, guarded 24/7, was equal parts offices, meeting space, armory, and clubhouse. Each of the offices contained a bed, bathroom, and shower stall. Still a work in progress, the non-armory parts were mostly built out in the tones of leather and intricate wood paneling that had always been Jonathan's favorites. The walls, floors, and ceilings concealed the latest in technology, built to Venice's specifications and providing her with nearly all the resources that were available to her in Fisherman's Cove. The hangar conference room was a smaller-scale version of the war room at the office. A 96-inch LED monitor hung on the far wall instead of the larger projection screen, and the table sat 6 comfortably instead of 12. But the creature comforts were all there, in walnut instead of teak. Venice was waiting for them as they entered the conference room. She sat at her command console and had already brought up an article from the Internet.
"Have a seat, everybody," she said. "I have news."
"Of the good variety or the bad?" Jonathan asked.
"I'll call it interesting, and you can take it from there," Venice said. "Should we wait for Big Guy?"
"I'm here,"
Boxer yelled as he entered the room.
"Don't wait for me."
Dawkins waited until everyone else was seated before choosing the spot next to Boxer's on the opposite side of the table from Jonathan and Gale.
"Okay," Venice said. "I did some research on the heels of your discussion with the lawyer in Santa Fe, Iglesias, right?"
"Right,"
Jonathan said.
"Well, he's all over the Internet because of his lawyering, pretty controversial character, but I didn't come up with anything that indicates he's a criminal himself. He represents them, vigorously. He's seen a couple of professional confrontations with the bar, but he's never been censured or punished, as far as I can tell. Why do we care about that? Dawkins asked.
Because it goes to his trustworthiness, Gale replied, whether we can believe what he tells us.
He didn't print on me as a liar, Jonathan said.
Boxers agreed.
Now look at the screen, Venice continued. This is an article about an incident in Blanton, Tennessee, a couple of days ago. You can read it if you want, but the bottom line of it is a bunch of cows were killed in a field, just dropped dead from what it looks like, or would have looked like, if a kid hadn't been in the wrong place at the wrong time.
A kid?
Jonathan asked.
Tell me you're talking about a baby goat,
Boxers said.
14-year-old boy, Venice said. Benny Ferguson. I'm not sure why or how he got there, but he was exposed to what police are suspecting was a chemical agent of some sort.
VX? Gale asked.
Some sort of chemical agent, that's all I've got. He lived nearby and was able to get himself home. He must have had some of the chemical on him or on his clothes, because when his mother tried to help, she got exposed too. She was able to make a 911 call, but by the time the ambulance got there, she was already dead. The boy died soon after. According to a report I picked up from ISIS, Mom told the 911 call taker that the boy mentioned something about twins.
Something about? Jonathan prodded.
That's what the report says. The police are working on the assumption that a pair of twins had something to do with planting whatever they planted.
What was it?
Boxers asked.
Again, this is from ISIS.
The Interstate Crime Information System was an outgrowth of the 9/11 attacks that allowed jurisdictions across the country to detail elements of ongoing investigations in real time.
The dispensing device they used in the field was rigged to self-destruct. There's nothing left except a pile of melted plastic and metal.
That's smart, Dawkins said. Leave no trace evidence.
But why would they want to kill a bunch of cows?
Practice run, Jonathan said.
Now all we have to do is find the right pair of twins in butt-scratch Tennessee.
Blanton,
Venice corrected.
A couple of the state police crime scene techs got sick when they were going over the area, too, and a volunteer firefighter died from his exposure.
VX is nasty shit, Jonathan said. It sticks around. Unlike sarin and some of the others, VX is an area denial weapon. It's supposed to kill bad guys and keep other bad guys from taking their place. If they deploy that in an urban area, I don't even want to think about the consequences.
And I know who the twins are, Venice said. Her smile showed that she dropped her bomb with appropriate drama and timing.
Of course you do,
Boxer said.
And God forbid you share it with the rest of us.
Venice explained, while you were jetting back, I did some poking around the various security camera feeds in Blanton, Tennessee. To be honest, there aren't many, but it was a place to start. There are two banks, one grocery store, and a half a dozen gas stations.
You just sat and watched video feeds? Dawkins asked.
He looked horrified.
Mother Hen has her way of streamlining, Gale said. I didn't have to look all that long. On a whim, I tied the video feeds with some of the specialized facial recognition software we got access to from Derek Hallstrom.
Who is Derek Hallstrom? Dawkins asked.
He was part of the team for a while, Jonathan said.
He watched Venice's face, her eyes in particular, as she mentioned Derek's name. Jonathan almost wished that she showed more emotion, but maybe she really had fully processed the reality of his death. He hoped that was the case. She hadn't discussed it with him, and he'd be lying if he said he was disappointed by that. He supposed she had Father Dom and Gale as confidants if she needed them.
"Let's just leave it at that," he said.
"I lucked out and got a hit within the first few minutes," Finice went on, "in the grocery store."
"You were looking for twins?"
Boxers asked. "No, I was looking for faces that triggered a warning through the facial recognition. You'd be surprised how many there are, but one that jumped out at me was this one." She pressed a button on her computer, and the screen displayed the image of a 20-something man with unwieldy dark hair and a prominent nose. Jonathan pegged him as an Arab, but that didn't seem quite right. The picture was taken from an elevated angle and featured automatic glass doors in the background. While they watched, Finice clicked another key, and a second picture crowded the first one over to the left. The new image appeared to be the same young man, but it looked more like a passport photo. "This is Aslan Kadyrov," Finice said. "The image on the left is from the grocery store in Blanton. The one on the right comes from the Department of Homeland Security terror watch list. He's a Chechen national." Dawkins shifted in his seat. "And he is not supposed to be here in the United States." She clicked another key and the same face appeared. "This is Aslan's twin brother, Kassan, also on the DHS list. Now, I'm sure there are 1,000 legitimate reasons for these boys to be in Blanton, Tennessee."
"I can't think of a single one," Jonathan interrupted. "Those are our guys. At least that's how we're going to treat them."
"Our guys?" Boxer said. "How were they our guys? I thought our guys were 11 and 13 years old."
"We can't just ignore an imminent chemical weapons threat," Jonathan said.
"Then we tell the cops," Boxer said. "In fact, we've got one right here."
He pivoted his head toward Dawkins.
"Agent Dawkins, there appears to be an imminent chemical weapons threat that you should take care of."
Back to Jonathan.
"See? Done and done."
Dawkins looked okay with that. "Okay, fine. I'll see what I can do."
"No, you won't,"
Finice said. Dawkins looked startled. Gale explained, "How are you going to explain your methods for obtaining the information you bring to your supervisors?"
"Fruit from the poisonous tree," Jonathan explained. "You can't get officially involved without causing a lot of trouble for Security Solutions."
"There's got to be some way," Dawkins objected. "I mean, this is huge. We could be talking about thousands of lives. Uncle Sam has a lot more resources."
"They certainly do," Gale interrupted. "They have more operational and investigative resources than we do. We're not using any information that they can't dig up on their own."
"And if they don't?"
"Then they're not very good at their jobs," Jonathan said. "There were only a couple of rules in bringing you into the inner sanctum, as it were. One of them had everything to do with your skills as a keeper of secrets."
Dawkins looked offended. "I'm not going to betray you," he said. "Your team always comes first, but there's got to be something we can do. Sure, I get that we've got to get those kids away from the bad guys, but the two missions, the kids and the terrorists, are not mutually exclusive, are they?"
"No, they're not," Gale said. "In fact, I think they're complementary."
She turned to Finice.
"Then, we need to talk to Connie Kendall."
The room erupted in laughter.
"Good luck with that,"
Big Guy said through a guffaw.
"For what?"
Finice asked.
"We need to know who her husband's contacts were for this distribution network for the VX."
"What will that give us?"
Jonathan asked.
Let me see if I understand all the moving parts, Gale thought aloud. And we'll have to assume that everyone is telling the truth, otherwise we've got nothing at all.
Agreed,
Jonathan said.
I concur, Boxer said, but I'm not comfortable with it.
For now, we have to assume that Armand Cortez, the entire C-squared for that matter, is just a distraction from what's going on. It's his right-hand man.
She looked to Dawkins. Lupo, he said. Hector Alameda.
Right. Lupo was the only tie to the cartel for this, and only insofar as he's leveraging the Mule Network. Where are you going with this? Vinice asked. I don't know yet. Just stick with me as I connect the dots. The VX is everything. That's the reason for the panic south of the border, and it's the reason why the Kendall boys were kidnapped. Back to Dawkins. How smart is this Lupo guy?
I don't know how to answer that.
He doesn't impress me as stupid, but I'm pretty sure you won't find a Phi Beta Kappa key in his pocket.
What are you thinking?
Gale continued thinking aloud. Let's assume he's not sophisticated, electronics-wise. Let's assume he doesn't cover his cybertracks as well as he should.
She bored her gaze into Vinice, as if hoping that Mother Hen would figure out where she was going without having to articulate the details.
Lupo is a pivot point, Vinice said, her eyes growing wide with the realization. If we can reconstruct his communications lines...
We can find the kidnappers, Jonathan said, completing the circuit. Right?
Yes, Vinice said. Well, indirectly, but that's the bottom line.
How can you do that?
Boxers asked.
You're going to get the chatter between him and the Chechen guy from Mexico? It doesn't take a Phi Beta Kappa key to know that it's stupid to deal directly with the people in the field. That's a way too solid line back to yourself.
But we can find the go-between, Jonathan said. At least we'll have a good shot at it.
Don't forget that terrorism is a business, Gale said. Jihadis understand economy and efficiency as well as any other businessmen. We know now that they have a tie to Tennessee. Tennessee is close enough to the site of the kidnapping that maybe they took the kids to the same place. If we can find that place...
We can find the kids,
Boxers said.
And maybe the so-called special product, Dawkins said. That's a lot of assuming, Vinice said.
Jonathan agreed.
Follow the evidence where it takes you, Ven. Let us know what you need from us. How are you on sleep?
Better than any of you are, Vinice said. I can keep going.
I can't,
Boxers said.
I know the clock is ticking, but I need a couple of hours of shut-eye. You guys got to sleep on the plane.
Go take a nap,
Jonathan said.
In fact, everybody but Vinice take a 3-hour break. Dawkins, you can crash on the sofa in my office.
What happens in 3 hours? Dawkins asked.
By then, Jonathan said, I will have found a way to talk to Connie Kendall. How are you going to do that?
Boxers asked. Jonathan winked.
I know people, he said.